Hey everyone, just popping in here, and I'm so excited to say that I have been nominated for the second year in a row for Favorite Adult Podcast for a 2024 AVN Award, which is super exciting. I'm super humbled and just really, really gracious and just stoked that some of you guys voted for me and in the pre-nom. So thank you so much. I would really appreciate at this time for your vote. So go ahead and check the links in our show notes below for the voting link. You could vote up to 5 times per day up until the awards on the 27th. And I hope to see you all there at the AVNs. Come say hi and don't be a stranger. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you. Welcome back to another episode of Stripped by Sia, your podcast for strippers, sex workers, and all the fancy naked people in between. I am your host, Steph Sia, aka Kimchi. It is 2024. It's a new year. You will not be catching me on stage if that's what you're looking for in terms of like the beginning of this episode. I was like mentioning about where I'll be. I am not currently booked, but you can find me online because I'm also an adult creator and content creator on OnlyFans, as well as a cam girl on Streammate. You can find me there exclusively. Other than that, yes, I am a sex worker. If you're listening and tuning in for the first time, this show is all about sex work and especially dedicated to destigmatizing our industry. And I do that by educating folks, by bringing wonderful, talented human beings on the show every single week, including this week. And if you are curious about who you bring on, you're just going to have to wait a couple more minutes longer. But we are talking about sex worker representation in the media, because it has been a little while since we've talked about that. And when I say a little while, it's more than a few seasons now that we've chatted about this. So hold your horses. We will get there. But I just want to say some... First of all, since it's 2024, I just want to say hello and thank you to all you wonderful, fabulous listeners out there. I cannot thank you enough for your support. It's going into year 5 of the show, which is really crazy to me, but also very humbling and just amazing. I still can't believe we're here. So I just want to thank you guys. If you've listened to the show once, if this is the first time you're listening, if this is like the 1,000th time listening, thank you all so much for your support, including those folks who are also financially supporting the show on Patreon. I just want to give a quick little shout out to those who are on the top tier there. We've got Snooze from Germany. We've got Justin Erickson. We've got Geyser, Selena Money, Moxie Mayhem, Eric Araujo. We got B York from Seattle. We've got McKenna King from, I think, Edmonton. Red Door Products. Hello, Dan, all the way from Seattle as well. Thanks again for contributing. And if you're curious about like what those costs are, it's as low as $4 a month. So the price of, again, questionable about like where you get your coffee, but could be $4 a month, which is as low as a coffee where you might be located. And that gives you access to exclusive bonus content, which is not available anywhere anymore. So all those fun bonus episodes, you've got video exclusive content, you'll get the videos before everyone else gets them on social media, because you only get like a really, really small clip of that on social media, as well as getting the episode before anybody else does. So go check it out. It's patreon.com/strippedbysia, and hopefully we'll see you on over on the other side there. If you do enjoy shows like this and you're curious about educating yourself more about the adult industry, then check out my network, which is skyhawkafterdark.tv. It is a network, as I mentioned, that is full of other adult creators. We've got podcasts, we've got videocasts, other fun, great projects there. So go check them out at skyhawkafterdarktv.com. And last but not least, if I didn't mention it before, I'll mention it now. If you are subscribing on Patreon and you're wondering where those dollars are going, they're going towards majorly funding my website. 100% of the cost definitely go to that. And if there's anything extra, which sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't, it will go to me attending adult industry events like Expos, any kind of conferences that we have in town and whatnot. Because, you know, at the end of the day, everything is a cost. So that is that. And speaking of websites, if you are looking to get your website done, you could go contact my friend Anthony Joe of Fox Digital. He helps sex workers build their websites or maybe like give their existing websites a makeover. Go check him out because he's offering all Stripped by Sia listeners 20% off new website builds or just new websites in general. So check him out. Tell him I sent you. It's foxdigital.design. And we're back here talking about sex work representation in the media. Sorry, guys. This is like my first time recording in a little bit. And I've been sick for over a week. So if you hear me hawking, like coughing and hacking in the background and sniffling, that is what's going on right now. So I apologize. But I'm very excited to bring on our guest on today. They are a huge advocate in the sex industry space up here in Canada, which I'm really, really great to start to collaborate with a lot more Canadian sex workers again. They are also, I guess, the owner. They run the largest sex work media archive in the world. They are also the executive director of Swap Hamilton, internationally acclaimed trans femme full service expert with over 10 years of experience. And what else do I have to hear? This is a huge list. I keep scrolling and just keeps going on. But I am very excited to bring Yelena Vermillion on to the show today. And if you're not aware of this name, then have you been living under a rock or something? Without further ado, seriously, I'm just like, and you started following me. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so freaking cool.
Well, I'm surprised that my friends knew you. Hi, it's Yelena Vermillion. I was surprised that like my friends in town, one of my friends in town is friends with Lula Blue, and then Lula had suggested that I just simply ask you.
Yeah.
And it worked out, and I'm so honored. So thank you so much, and I'm grateful to be on air with you. And I love your podcast. I think that it's really important. You know, I'm more of a book girl, but I'm a little bit reticent to podcasts in general, not like any particular individual, just like podcast as a format, I guess. But I've been trying to grow, trying to branch my horizons and do new things. And even though I do so much, as you mentioned, I wanted to like, for example, I'm trying to like maybe become more intelligent by learning different language, and just like branching my brain so that I can be more effective in ways that I could not imagine. But the way that I currently use my brain to dispel stigma around sex workers, their labor, and actually most of the work I do is yes, focused on sex work and sex workers, but broadly it's focused on advocating for marginalized women. Mm-hmm. I'm a transgender woman. I moved out at 17 from an abusive household. I have a very sort of deep and nuanced understanding of like gender, race, class, and like an intersectional based on Kimberlé Williams Crenshaw's theory of intersectionality. So the understanding of how all of those intersecting, gender, race, class experiences, usually, you know, of course, her theory starts with race first, and it's race based on other forms of positionality. So, of course, being white is such a mitigating factor for myself that I use my whiteness as a tool. When I'm in the media, for example, I use my whiteness and I use my passing privilege as a trans woman to wield authoritatively. And unfortunately, because of the power dynamics of colorism and you know, white supremacy, my message is unfortunate the dynamic, but what happens is the effect is it's assimilated, the message of decriminalization of sex work, of why is it important that these laws are removed, why is it important that we understand and educate the public about, okay, what has the government done, how is it violating everyone's rights, and how could your rights be violated as simple as being called a whore, you know, and the social ostracism that comes from that. Mm-hmm. I relate that to my experiences of poverty, my experiences of homelessness, my experiences of being, enduring abuse. And ultimately, I fight for justice. And I see so much injustice happen to and around sex workers and in sex work, and it's not their fault. And I see the infantilization, and I see the schism of treating of how the government and society treats sex workers because of the erroneous criminal law and because of stigma as both victims and criminals, and their babies, but also we have to take their children away, and like there's just so much violence that we endure that I am just sick of it. And so the only way that I could see a way forward, the way that I felt that I could make a positive impact, is that is by educating. And I looked at research, and it showed, and like I've talked to my friends about people with cognitive dissonance, and how do we make the world a better place when you're at a rally and the people in front of you are screaming hate? And I've tried to practice what I preach. I've gone to the hate rally at the Hamilton Wentworth District School Board. There was like a huge anti-trans. They were saying, don't educate about trans stuff in school because we want our kids to be kids or whatever, and don't let kids use a different name without notifying the parent, which essentially outs them. And I tried to speak to a couple of women. One was Muslim and one was I believe Christian. Yeah, one was Muslim, one was Christian. And we, I basically was like, had a conversation with them, and I tried to be like, look, I'm transgender, this is my experience. And while they listened, there was a couple of the bad actors behind them that tried to sort of interject and interrupt. But eventually I was like, this isn't your conversation. You need to leave. I'm speaking to these women. And we had a productive conversation. I was essentially like, what you're tr so I tried to parse out, what was their problem? What do you believe? What do you feel? What is your concern? They told me, for example, that it's like they don't want children to be educated in a certain way. And this can be applied to sex workers as well, because it relates to stigma, it relates to misinformation and disinformation. And so when we're having this conversation, eventually we came to the like conclusion that the messaging on their sign was very violent because it didn't actually relate to what they wanted to say, and it was just like a bit of like shock factors. It was as shocking as the signs you see in like on the corner of any intersection of like the pro-lifers that have the the bloody fetus signs. It's like shock factor. And so we sort of agreed on that, and we agreed that the messaging could be better and or more effective or clear. And then I explained how that would be hurtful and why people are responding with such emotion. And then eventually I was like, I agree with you. Like, maybe we should. Anyways, the point that I'm getting at is that, like, to change the world, you have to relate to an emotional part of their brain where they can actually understand the impact emotionally. And generally, the research shows that the only way people change their minds about something they already have an ingrained prejudice about, or an assumption, or preconceived notion, is that, they have to know someone. So until they know someone who's trans, until they know someone who's black and who has been either murdered or experienced racism or has seen it firsthand. I lived in Virginia, for example, for 6 months in 2014 as a on a B2 visa as a foreign national, and I saw black men walking on the sidewalk getting carded. I haven't seen that in Canada, and they talk about Canada's racism being under the carpet, and like I got to see where plantations used to be, that kind of racism. And it's like it's sobering because it really, you need to understand and witness and experience degradation, I believe, in order to sort of like fully be a full person and to like have the full arsenal of humanity to respond to the world. And so I use media. So I'm a very prophetic thinker, and so I was like, okay, I need to use the media, not just in the sense of appearing in media appearances, which I've done many printed publications, live radio and television as well, but many many news interviews for articles, newsprint, whatever. And I think it's the fact that many other people, bad actors, and I think of how I feel disenfranchised of having children because of like inaccessibility, because of financial reasons, and also because of like
Truth.
mental illness, maybe family dynamics, maybe I couldn't adopt because I'm poor and all of the stigma around sex work, all of these things. But poor people and bullies are still having children. And so I need to put my mouth out there. I need to at least put my thoughts out there, because all of the people who are muddling the conversation using falsehoods around human, so-called human trafficking and all of this bullshit,
right.
When domestic violence in the home and abuse of our children and youth in the home is really a much more prevalent thing. And I, as someone with personal experience with that, like, I think that it just spits in the face of what violence actually occurs and what actually needs attention and real care, not just carceral solutions. So for me, I look to media. I was enriched by media through my life. It kept me alive. Listen to music. You know, and so when this is all leading up to the archive, by the way, so for me, like, I just was really inspired a bit by a sociological theory called the spiral of silence, which is by Elizabeth Noel Newman, who is a Holocaust survivor.
Okay.
She's since passed, but the theory of this. This sociological theory says essentially that people in society know and can ascertain what the majority opinion is on any particular subject, especially ones that are, you know, divisive or, you know, that cause a lot of division. And so the thing that people do is when to respond to the majority opinion, they will censor their own thoughts and they will conform to the majority opinion in order to avoid becoming target of this,
right,
of the stigma, and therefore they don't want to become associated. So there's actually like many ingrained like tribalistic like dynamics and mechanisms that just automatically happen because a lot of us don't get past. You know, I'm in nursing school, and so you know, we study cognitive developmental theories, psychosocial, psychosexual, moral development theories. You know, Kohlberg, Erikson's, and Paget's theory, for example. And you know, some adults never get past the original, like the first stage of, you know, just like avoiding punishment and seeking reward. Like they're always this and that, and a lot of us don't have deep thought around the world. It's mostly just like our base Maslow's needs, and many, and that's okay, but like many of us don't think like largely about the dynamic of the world and the interplay between different conventions and society and history, and there's a lot to say, right?
Yeah,
and so
for sure.
It's hard to really capture. And so this theory essentially teaches that the media has responsibility in representing marginalized folks or any kind of thing that needs amelioration, that needs healing, there's a responsibility with the media to represent these folks with dignity and nuance and like
right.
compassion, because ultimately what it does is perpetuate or get rid of stigma. Hopefully. So, and we know that historically we see so many representations of sex workers in media as the dead hooker, the dead hooker, the dead hooker, the dead hooker.
Yeah. Someone that's murdered. Someone gets
right.
killed first.
Someone
yeah.
that deserves it. Someone that had it coming. She was a drug addict. Someone who
right.
was considered less than. And that's so deeply ingrained in people's minds that we don't forget, that we absolutely forget that most of modern society is built on the flesh of our backs, of sex
mm-hmm.
workers' backs.
Totally.
We were there during the HIV epidemic when, you know, there was mutual aid being, you know, provided in communities, when HIV response programs were being provided and disseminated by sex workers on the street in their fucking communities. Transsexual sex workers who are drug users, who were homeless, were providing more shelter and education than fucking our government ever was.
Right.
And our government, you know, so I'm thinking, you know, we have been intrinsically, and so for me, I needed to learn that myself. I needed to understand. I had such, Carolee's ashes are in this necklace. So the woman who coined the term sex work. She, her, I met her, I didn't get to meet her, but I was friends with her and we did a video together. And so we'll talk about making media. And she was a famous, you know, she's had, she was an award-winning documentarian and videographer.
Wow.
And she, we sort of did a little project together before she died. And I got to go to her memorial when she did pass, and she named me in her will. And
wow.
Like, the check's on its way. Like, it's only a couple grand, but it's still a beautiful honor to even be considered for something like that. And I was able to meet her childhood friends. And so I'm deeply inspired by the lineage of sex work advocacy. And for those that don't know, the coining of the term sex worker, Carol Lee was at a feminist conference in the 70s, mid to late 70s. And they were having a panel or some sort of conversation about what was then referred to as prostitution most commonly. And they had used the term sex use industry. And Carol piped up and said, you know, I don't really feel comfortable using that term because it feels like it's objectifying me. And, you know, I'm an actor. Like an autonomous, consensual, active actor in this exchange, the sexual exchange. And so I think it should be sex work. And
yeah.
She changed the way that we linguistically reflect on and relate to our sexual labor as sex workers. I would consider that we as young sex workers take for granted the paradigm and the framework that we actually, the language that we actually have, the TikTok videos, the discourse, all of it, even though it's we are deplatformed and we are censored on purpose, and a lot of us feel discouraged to speak. The fact that we can still access so much online is so incredible, because, and we have to understand that it's something we should feel proud to take up for, for granted, because she wanted that for us, because she wanted for all of us to relate to our work in a way that was dignified and that was individualistic, because that's always what it's going to be. Everybody relates to work in a way that is individual, regardless of if it's in the sex industry or not. And I wanted to take all of the lineage that I had been so, that I have been so privileged and so blessed to just encounter and be a part of and be welcomed into, which, as someone who's so lonely and deals with mental illness and like struggles to make friends, like, it was just such a blessing for me, and it kept me alive. It was another reason to live. And
yeah.
I had been going through for like 5 years or so a situation with my living arrangement where essentially I was being targeted for eviction for a long period of time because they had found out that I'm trans and because they knew that I was a sex worker and like I'm in the media. So they kind of put two and two together.
Oh,
and so, yeah, so they, and like they were doing heinous things. Like, this is going to be the probably one of the juiciest episodes you ever make. Like, they were blowing up. So they had taken every single tactic to try and evict me. So when I say every single tactic, I mean like every single framework that they could try and argue. So they said that I was trying to, they said that I had too many things in my back room and that I was causing a fire hazard, so fire code. They were trying to say to the municipal law enforcement that I had been running an illegal business, so they were trying to get me under the licensing code. They tried they made a noise complaint to the municipal law enforcement saying that I, quote, and I know the exact, I'm paraphrasing it, but it's pretty much the same. The only reason I know the content of the claim is because one of the employees, who I won't name here for reasons, but she was a city employee, or is a city employee, she read out the complaint to me, even though she wasn't supposed to, but she was kind enough to do that. The complaint said that, I almost said my legal name.
I'm like, let's not do that.
Yelena makes, Yelena makes sex noises like all through the night, and like Yelena makes sex noises all through the night. No, it's Yelena makes indecent sounds all throughout the night, and
right.
Like, they had made a claim that it was at 3 or 4 in the morning, so it had gotten to the point where I was so fed up that I had installed cameras all around my apartments and inside my apartment, including like pointing at my bed, because I was like, you know what, I'm gonna catch them in a lie, and I did, because they had eventually started making a pattern of like, oh, there's sex noises happening again, there's sex noise happening. So one night they were like, it happened last night at 3 a.m. I'm like, pulled up my camera footage, there I am sleeping at 3 a.m. In fact, here's from 12 a.m. when I went to bed I gave it to them after I was done masturbating, and then and then like whatever till like I gave it like 2 hours after they said I was doing it. I'm like, here I'm sleeping the whole time. Funny how you lie a lot. And then whatever, they kind
Oh
of,
my
that's when the
gosh.
table started to finally turn, when I started to put my foot down and to be like, no, you can't just make up these heinous lies. They blew up condoms and put them in the walkway. They would refuse
Oh wow,
to.
that's lots of things going on there. This sounds so
Yeah, like
malicious.
I hope people understand. Like, the reason why I want to tell you all these things on the podcast specifically is because it illustrates the length that people will go to, and the length that people, like, how much people will wield stigma to harm you. And I remember one time I ended up. I stopped, a guy stopped being interested in me, and then he was just like automatically flipped, and he was like, oh, I'll just tell people you were a prostitute. They won't care. I'm like, oh, wow, there you go. Thanks for outing yourself sooner. But anyway, so the point is that it culminated in when he made a false complaint to the police about me. He said that I was cr causing property damage when I was not. The police officer assaulted me, and
Oh,
like, or at
gosh.
least he met the definition, like the threshold of criminal assault in Canada. He was arrested because of my cameras, because I had footage of it. And he was actually, I got him demoted as well. So what happened was I sued the police, and I sued the situation with my living situation, including the superintendent and them. And I won. I actually serendipitously signed. Oh, I can't. No, I can. It was
Can
resolved
we do
yesterday. I can say that. It
that?
was resolved yesterday. So it's just serendipitous because it's been a long battle. Most people wouldn't stay and allow themselves to be harassed. But I took all of the. When I had sued the police, I had won a while ago. And, like, it was two separate parts. And just, like, recently, this part with the. My living situation had been separately successful. So the original success of the police lawsuit, I had taken over 10 grand of the funds that I won, and bought the majority of the books in the archive that exist today, and then I donated them to the library, including like the book scanner. And then I also had like 14 portraits made by various local artists in Hamilton, and paid them in cash. Well, paid, it doesn't matter how I paid them, but some of them your transfer, some of them cash. But I paid them their rate, is what I'm trying to say. And they did like 24 by 36 portraits of sex workers from across the world that were famous for various parts of historical, activisms. And so I started scanning, basically through the pandemic, the archive.
Sorry, this
Like
is
they were,
this how the archive started, or how, what's the
yeah, that's
story
why I
with the
told it.
archive?
That's why I told it. Yeah. Yeah.
So
So
this is what
like,
happened. This is where it stemmed from.
yeah, like I was under attack of in my living situation. And because I had moved out at 17, I basically had been moving out and seeking safety my entire life. I moved out of an abusive household, and yeah, this is just gonna be the juiciest episode ever, because it's gonna be me rambling, it's gonna be everything, and they're gonna be like, wow, that's why you do that. And I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm Sailor Moon, man. So I moved out from an abusive household as a trans woman at 17. I basically bounced back and forth from my mom and my dad's, like, it was shitty. It was shitty. They basically just used me as a pawn. So we moved out, tried to seek safety and solace, finished high school, tried to do like secular stuff, saw the discrimination, realized I was trans, whatever, tried to transition, and I had to do sex work when I became homeless, and I had always been interested in it because I had seen Billy Piper's depiction of Belle du Jour in Secret Diary of a Call Girl, that's what it's called. Which was like probably, and Milk Money as a kid, I watched that in the 1992 or 1994 film. I can't remember. Melanie Griffith. Yeah, and so essentially, like, I wanted to take all of the suffering that I had experienced and the pushback with landlords and stay, and basically I've won. And so I was able to like get seek resilience, and I was able to take all of the, you know, the reparations, if you will, and put it towards like a meaningful project towards back to my community. And what's better than taking money from the police that caused violence against you as a trans woman for no good reason, and giving it back to sex workers, because we know how much violence the police have caused sex workers in their lives,
totally,
including Black trans women, including Shivrana Abdi, who was a sex worker who in 2003, she was a Black Somalian trans woman sex worker from, and she was a refugee who lived in Hamilton. She, in 2003, she was on cocaine, experiencing some distress, and she called the police, and when they arrived, they dragged her face by her ankles, face first, downstairs. Her teeth were knocked out and she died, and they ruled her death as accidental, and her family did not claim her body because she was trans and she was considered shameful to them. And I also advocate around women with HIV. I do education about pre-exposure prophylaxis. So it all comes together, media, education, compassion, increasing people's relation to understanding. And so that's the archive has been a project for many years. I wouldn't say necessarily, well, honestly, it's been a blur because COVID, started in 2020, it's already 2023.
Yep. So you started in 2020, you mentioned?
I think it was slightly before 2020 because the harassment started before COVID for sure, 100%. But I think it started in a low scale way. It started with zines, the majority of the zines where I was, actually collecting physical zines, not scanning. And then once I got more funds, I bought a book scanner. I used like a ScanSnap SV something. I also use other tools of the trade, like this blue. I don't have the book scanner here, unfortunately, because it's big and bulky and heavy. But this is like a Blu-ray. It also does DVDs and CDs. You know, you can use it to rip with certain programs the content, and you can remove the what is it called? The digital rights management software or encryption, whatever it might use, in order to make the file just like easily clickable. There's not going to be any problems for the person accessing the file. Yeah, and then like I moved to scanning old books that had never been digitized ever, which was really cool. I was able to get some personal books from Valerie Scott's library as well as Amy Leibovitz's library, which I returned to them. I think the two were Shannon Hall's Women of the Night and also Horror Carnival by Shannon Bell. Very interesting books. So yeah, and just like it started growing, and the archive itself is probably, the amount of money I've spent on it, it's probably worth over 15 to 20K of just physical materials that I've, because I really just like don't believe in hoarding that for myself. I don't think it's right. I think that the best thing that I can do is, we are so deplatformed and censored, and people won't listen to us, and they think we're babies, like in interacting with city council and our legislators and everything is so difficult, and it's an experience in vomiting, it's an experience in being shat at, basically. And it's anything I can do to keep my dignity in check and to sort of remind other women and other sex workers, because it's not just women, but you know, I understand that I'm here for women, I'm a girl's girl. I'm always going to support male and non-binary sex workers, of course. But I'm here for the girls, majorly. And I think that, yeah, for me, it's all about letting people know that they have everything within themselves that they need. And I want people to be reminded of that. I know we only have like 15 minutes or so, right? Left.
I know, we still got time. It's okay. Don't worry. I got this. I got this. I have some questions for you though. So
are you loving it?
Yeah. There's a lot of things going on. I have lots of questions, but I just wanted to let you speak and have your moment. But going back to you and going back to the archive, like, is this something that is publicly accessible or something, or like a resource that people or academics can call upon, or tell us about that aspect?
Yeah, so it's a very unique thing. So I kind of gatekeep it for a specific reason, and it's not in any bad way. It's actually a FONS, which means a FONS is this fancy word in archive world to mean a collection of items. Like the items in the collection is the FONS, F-O-N-D-S. And so It's an official Fonz collection in the Archives, Canada's National LGBTQ2S Archives, which is an honor. They named it after me. It
Amazing.
has its own link, permanent URL. It can be looked at there. The current list of items in that particular URL is not fulsome. However, if one contacts me on social media and tells me what they are looking to do with it, I generally am very generous with providing either individual or parent links depending on the particular project. And I, you know, please goes a long way with me. I don't need to be, I don't need to have my feet kissed, but I do appreciate cordial messages that include a please and a thank you. I've had
Totally.
some people ask me to access particular, like, for example, I have all of the five series, sorry, seasons of Kink. The Kink
Oh,
series, the
yeah.
old Canadian, which includes Nina Arsenault and Todd Clink, and also Sybil, why can't I remember her last name? The amazing author Sybil, her last name is escaping me, but she's a friend. She and so she's also in that. It's just like a piece of Canadian history and sex work history that's so unique. It was like $500 on Amazon to get the last five cop DVD copies. I ripped them, I included them, and a lot of people have asked for that particular file, for example, without saying please. And it's just like, I'm happy. Just like let me know why and say please. Like a normal polite person, right?
That you're
Anyway.
not asking for a lot. That's just
No, I'm really
regular
not. You
manners.
know, like, yeah, it's just about manners. It's not about like kissing my feet. I don't want you to grovel at me. I just like please, like I'm autistic. Like I have to play by the rules sometimes. Could you try? Thanks. Yeah, so the rules that I play by with it are, so for example, I had a researcher from, really amazing researcher from Austin, Texas. She's actually, she goes between Montreal and Austin, Texas. And she was asking for like certain films related to trans women, if I may have had them. And I was, you know, she was, you know, she said please and thank you. And as long as I know what the intention is, and like, you know, she's like, I want to represent trans women and like sex workers and like really like, you know, underscore our history and like represent the dolls. I'm like, okay, done. Here's the link. You can
That
have
makes
it.
sense.
If it is just like, if it's a researcher, I am wary. I do tend to gatekeep with researchers. I need to know if it's,
What's the
I need to know if
agenda?
the researcher, if it has been or is currently a sex worker, and I need to know what their intention is. I need to also, like, even if I know that their intention is good, I need to think about the efficacy of the research, because we can move into the TransPulse thing next if you want, but like I've done certain consultancies, and I actually just negotiated another research, health research project for sex workers in Hamilton with the research shop through McMaster's Office of Community Engagement, which we can talk about as well. But the yeah, so I'm understanding a little bit of it. I'm not saying I'm an expert, you know, epidemiologist researcher or anything like this. However, I can look over what their ideas are, what their dissertation might be, and have an idea of, is this going to be making material difference in sex workers' lives? Is this something that legislators might have to look at or be effect like listen to in the future? If not, I don't opt to allow them access.
I
If
think that's fair, though.
yeah, that's the main, you know, gatekeeping is okay if it's depending on the intention. It's for me, I want the archive to be for us and us, like exactly, like it's for us to not only feel seen and heard and loved and known and witnessed, but also to for our researchers among our community, for our, those even, you know, they can be an ally, that's fine, but like I need to know what their intention is and whether or not the research has a, you know, I've worked with Thérèse Bernier, for example, a couple of times. I've been both a subject in her research, and I've also helped her produce questions and helped her find participants. So I've done, you know, I've done multiple forms, and I think that ultimately we just want to move forward, and that's the goal. So I don't want anybody to misuse it, and that's why I do it like that.
No, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. 'Cause like going back to like, I was referring to like academia and like research and stuff. And sex workers get asked a lot, and we get approached a lot to be a subject or be subjects, with no honorarium, with no any kind of like credit or anything like that. So I think you have every right to be protective about this archive. I think that is actually smart, and like really being wary about what are your intentions? What are you actually planning to do with it? Is this going to benefit our community or not? Or is this actually going to harm us? Like, what is your research about? So I think those are all really, really valid questions. And like, generally speaking, like I'm not a big person that's I'm not like big on gatekeeping, but like when it does boil down to the intention, you have to actually really figure that out first before you let the floodgates.
Yeah, I mean, like at the end of the day, I don't feel bad about it because it's like, oh, I'm sorry, are you a PhD student? Like, I'm pretty sure you are fine. Like, you can either pay for the things that I've paid for to access, or you can be a PhD student and learn how to teach yourself how to pirate things on the internet like I did, because I'm not going to help you if you really like are you going to credit me or anybody, like, you know? And that's also another thing, I do like to be credited. I didn't like to before, but when it comes to academics, I absolutely, because I've, you know, I have a very large CV. I have an impressive CV, and I really don't want to undercut my own expertise. And you know what? I think we do that as sex workers. We are not only do we do that too often, we are encouraged to do that. And I don't want to fall into that trap. And so I'm like, no, you know what? Like, any consultancy I provide, I'm an expert. I've been paid to testify as an expert witness against, you know, in a criminal proceeding, but against in a constitutional challenge against a sex work law, explaining why to the judge, you know, a sex worker might hire a third party, a photographer, or a security officer, whatever, secretary. Ultimately, we want to, you know, we want to move forward. So
yeah, and give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
Period.
Oh, actually, it's funny to say that because it has been controversial. That's actually a positive sign, because I have gotten a lot of negative. I think it is worth stating, and I'd be remiss if I didn't state it, you know, it has ruffled feathers even among some activists and elder activists in the sex work community. I've been asked by a few authors and academics, mostly, I think I will say, who to have their books removed from the archive, and I've just refused multiple times, because my view on it, and I, you know, I guess I'll just state it here for anybody that wants the tea. I almost named names, and I won't do that. But anyway, they can listen to it here for once and for all. I believe, first of all, I'm an anarchist. I don't believe in copyright in every terms. I believe in copyleft. I think that. And that's not to say that I'm going to go out of my way to undercut a sex worker's like commercial profits. And that's exactly why I gatekeep it. And I don't make any commercial profits from it, just for everybody's, like, for the record. I've spent my own fucking money, and I've gone into debt to do this for us. And so I'm not trying to be a martyr of it or anything. But like, for those that I've heard whispers, I'm among the grapevine. I hear things. I know what people say about me and what things have been said about the archive. I think that the academics who, I think those academics who would not want their books in the archive need to really deeply investigate their ethics and understand maybe that the issue that they have is with their publisher exploiting them and not me. Because here's my dilemma. I have also an interest in law, and I have an interest in science, and I have an interest in a lot of intersecting things as they relate to sex work. And so copyright law and the precedents within the law state that a pirated piece of media does not equal a lost sale. In fact, most of the time when people see a piece of media that they love, they are more apt to purchase a copy later. And that's personally, I can relate to that. I sometimes, when I love a particular album or particular artist, I will purchase the digital, the CD, and the vinyl of the same album because I love that. Now, you know, we also need to give our head a shake, because as sex workers, I don't think any of us are becoming millionaires off of our memoirs. Like, can we get real? Let's just be honest with ourselves. And that's not because what we have to say isn't valuable and that we shouldn't be millionaires for that. But, like, unless we're Britney Spears and we have, like, the PR horses behind us, we really aren't going to have that happen. You know, I have 66K followers. I still experience deplatforming on Twitter. I'm sorry, that's on Twitter. Like,
yeah.
I don't have really many followers. I have like under 5K on Insta. It's nothing. But like, you know, like, it, at the end of the day, like, I having my archive does not actually deleteriously impact the income for sex workers whatever they produced is in the archive, because it's not undercutting them. In fact, most of the artists and authors of books are honored and have been, people have reached out to me to be put into the archive because they understand the true spirit and intention of it. And so ultimately I just say, you know, if I purchase a copy of your book, which all the people, individuals who have had a problem with me and have asked for their books either single time or multiple times to be removed. And there's like three or four titles that I'm thinking in mind. Again, I'm not going to name them. I have bought physical copies of every single one of those. Now there's two things I want to mention on that. The reason why I say physical copies is because if I buy a DVD and I invite my friend over and we watch that DVD, is like Paramount Pictures going to sue me? No. They're right. Not, right? So neither should you. Neither should you be having a problem, because I'm actually showing a friend of mine your work. And I'm actually like lauding it and saying, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful that it belongs in a category of being belonged. You know what I'm saying? A belonging, pardon me. And so anyways, the other part is that the current legal framework in Canada for libraries is that our archive is actually in an agreement. It's actually, we are in collaboration with our public library. Our public library backs me, our local history and archives department of our Hamilton Public Library specifically. Originally it was Karen Milligan, and then she changed positions, and now it's Luke Stempian. Bless all of their hearts. And I think it's also Grace and Anna are the other two employees. One of them helps scan. I think it's Grace, and Anna helps, is going to help like an exhibit be made of it. But, there's so much to say. Like, the Controlled Digital Lending Network or legal framework in Canada is what the library is going to be using to make the physical copies that we have in the archive be uploaded to the Internet Archive for public access. And you have to have a physical copy because that's how the library uses its institutional privilege in order to like, that is the only time in which copyright law can be, quote unquote, it's not actually violated because it's written in law to provide an exclusion for that particular circumstance, which has been my long-term goal for the archive. These people don't understand that like it being in the long-term archive means that it's like in a place of honor, like people want that to be. And so anyways, that is the intention of the archive, is humanizing everything and bringing us justice and bringing us representation and like go a place of solace for us to go to look at media for us when we want. Like, it's not a flippant thing. This thing is almost a terabyte. It's like 800 gigabytes or something like that. Wow. This whole the entire archive? Is it? Yeah. I can say, yeah, I can look it up right now. It's like 800 gigabytes. I'm pretty sure.
That's not that much.
Well, I mean, like in the scheme of things, no, but I'm also let me just make sure. Cause like I have multiple files in it. I can tell
you. While you look at that, I have questions for you too. So like if someone is like wanting to reach out to you and potentially like get something from the archive, I know maybe from what I've heard from this conversation, there's different mediums of media that are encompassed in there. You mentioned zines, there are some films, books, and stuff like that. Talking about media representation for sex workers, and I asked this question before we started recording, but like, what does like true representation mean, and what does it actually look like in your opinion?
It's nuance. It's not going to be any one particular character, or any one particular story, or any one particular movie or film or you know, like TV show. It's going to be an array of humanized, honest depictions of sex work for individual characters, or if it's a documentary, for individuals, you know. The thing that is unique about this archive is that, as I mentioned, it's based in the lineage of Carol Lee's, of the, you know, the honoring her history, and also because she formed the original San Francisco Sex Worker Films and Arts Festival, of which the collection of films she had, the repertoire, She allowed me graciously to access and pirate a lot of those things, knowing the intention of this archive. So many of the films
Wow.
and older documentary films in the archive, Die Yuppie Scum is one I'm thinking of, Our Bodies, Our Business is one I'm thinking of, are very good examples of like true HIV epidemic-based activism, you know, by sex workers, for sex workers in their communities. And it's just such, like, through the archive, I have basically learned that we have been saying the same thing for decades. We have been saying the exact same things for fucking decades, and no one gives a shit, and no one cares. It's poor mothers and people with disabilities and Black and Indigenous and Asian and otherwise racialized folks and like trans and non-binary folks and like people who are just trying to make a living, and they think we're
Yeah.
rich and we're not, and like men want to take lower prices, and then the police want to take money from us and pimp from us from fines, and it's like, and we don't, and how do you pay the fine other than working? And you can't, it's like they don't get it and they won't listen and they don't care, and it's just frustrating. So the only thing I could do, one thing that stands out in my mind is like when we had Swap Hamilton, the drop in space, we had like a three pane commercial glass window. And so I put like a monitor in the front window playing on loop 100, like 24/7. The Saint Nizier Church occupation of sex workers in 1976, I believe it was, in France. And, you know, I remember driving by one day and seeing a street-based sex worker standing there, and I actually was going to McDonald's, which was not far, so I decided to sit in the McDonald's, and then when I left, the documentary's like 45 minutes long, and
yeah.
So she stood on the street, and it wasn't like bad weather or anything, but she stood on the street and watched that in the front window the entire 45 minutes, and like, honestly, that is what I want. That's what, like, because I know that she could see herself.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of stigma that occurs is so heinous that people feel like they don't belong. And I feel
right.
like that so often that I just can't stand to let other people feel that way. It's just so terrible. And yeah, I mean, it kind of relates to the research that I just negotiated. Should I talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I think one more last thing too, in terms of the archive, what kind of categories are there too? Because it sounds like
categories.
I'm curious.
Yeah. So in the sex work archive, I'll read them direct instead of trying to paraphrase it from my mind. So there's so if you have the ParentLink archive, some of it's haphazard because I have, but the actual folders. So there's the Activism Toolkit by Stella Montreal. There's
yeah.
the Big Susie's folder. So the Big Susie's is actually a group preceding Swap Hamilton, which was formed by Ian Jarvis and Dr. Amber Dean. Sorry, she did her dissertation on the Vancouver's murdered women by Picton.
Right.
And so they gave us Swap Hamilton their $2,000 in their bank account left over when we started. They were very lovely. The next folder is Books from Amy. That just means the five books I got from Amy Leibovich. Hooks by Julie Oakes, Strip by Misty, Unrepentant Horror by Linda J. Eversole, Horror Carnival by Shannon Bell, and Ladies of the Night by Susan Hall. Oh, Hooks by Julie Oakes. The next one is Crime Think. I'm a big fan of Crime Think, that organization. So I have like a lot of their publications, and they also have their zines and posters and their film series. The next folder is Hamilton Sex Work History. It's a little bit more specific to Hamilton, so I just like segregate
right.
it for my own mental purposes and ADHD. The next folder is Sex Work Rights Photos, 17
oh, wow.
photos.
Cool.
Yeah, it's just like different like activisms from throughout the United States mostly, and different years of like people doing like sit-ins and stand-ins with red umbrellas and stuff. If you want it, I'm happy to share.
Cool.
The next one is Sex Workers Welcome Training, which is just my own, like, that's where I put my best practices trainings materials, and I figure like it's not proprietary, so I just put it in there if people need
sure.
to like adapt or whatever. The next one would be Sex Work Articles, which is different research stuff, including a lot of the research that would be in the Power Ottawa Research Repository, which is wonderful. The next one is sex work audio. There's not much. It's just like there was one particular guy that I met at the Montreal, Norman Naraki, at the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair this year, and he had like this interesting tape, and so it's in there. There's also, is that the pony? One second. Sex work audio. Press. Oh, right. There's also the 1980 interview for the Prostitutes of New York, which was like an old magazine and a group. They did like an interview with Annie Sprinkle. Anyways, the next folder is...
We got lots of stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. Sex work really books. Great stuff. Yeah, there is. Sex work books is the next folder. The next folder after that is sex work magazines. I'm the first person to digitize all of Spread magazine with the blessings of the original authors, for example. The next folder is sex work stickers, posters, etc. The next folder is sex work videos. The next folder is sex work scenes. And then the last folder is websites. And then there's like some like miscellaneous like files, but like they're self-titled. So yeah, it's pretty large. It's 900.
It's large. Yeah.
900 gigabytes. So it's just under a terabyte. But of course, I'm always scanning. It is. I mean, it's not a lot in the scheme of things, but. I'm always scanning like the PDFs to not be so giant so that hopefully they pull up on people's devices, upload on people's devices, like not so terribly long, but, there's a lot of actual files in there, like thousands and thousands. So, as far as videos, there's at least like, oh God, there's at least 500, there's at least 500 books. There's at least like, at least 150 to 200 documentaries perhaps. And there's at least 50 zines. It's incredible. I'm very, very proud of it. And
you should be. Yeah. That's incredible. And a lot of work too. So thank you for your hard work on that. And I understand why people want to get in on that and to also have access. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to share. It's just a matter of like, just want to make sure it's not going to be used in a way that's like going to hurt us or
malicious.
Or I mean, I'm not gonna give mean girls it either. Just for real, like just for real.
Yeah.
Like, if they're nice to me, I'll do it. But if I hear you're mean later, I'm canceling that link, girl. Like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yelena, I think we have a little bit of time to also talk more specifically about your advocacy work, the research that you're doing with TransPulse Canada, and also Swap Hamilton as well. We can do that before we dive into some Q&A. So leave some time for that.
Sure. I'll just like close note it because like honestly, there's like a huge living document about the stuff that we've accomplished via Swap Hamilton. But Swap Hamilton, I'd say like the main I'll start with the TransPulse and the research first. So with TransPulse Canada, I was able to help produce, implement, and consult with TransPulse Canada, the actual research team. I'm listed on their website as a member of their team as well as credited in it. And I also have a review on my LinkedIn from one of the main research directors of it. So it's really cool. But basically, it was about trans non-binary sex workers' experiences in Canada. There was two portions. They've also since released data about trans and non-binary sex workers' access to healthcare, even those who have a primary doctor in Ontario or in Canada. So and it basically said I think it's 46 to 52% of trans non-binary sex workers in Canada, or those who took the survey, have unmet healthcare needs within the last year. And then there was also data about trans and non-binary sex workers' experience with the police. So that's obviously very important.
Yes.
And then lastly, we were very recently approved for a research project that I proposed to the Research Shop, which is a part of the McMaster University's Office of Community Engagement. We were provided the acceptance by Evan Gravely, which is so lovely. I forget Anushka's last name. Anushka is our team lead, but essentially I proposed, and I should pull up the tweet because honestly I'm tired just like you're tired, and like I'm probably gonna missay it. So, and I hope I'm not putting you to sleep. I've been told I'm melodic.
No. So, not at all. I'm just trying to digest everything. So
a lot of info. I apologize. Thank God we can pause it. I'm going to say research. Evan Gravely. So effectively, the research is asking three specific areas. We're looking going to look at it's an it's to form a needs assessment document is the ultimate goal, but the three areas that we're going to use social work students, and I'm going to provide each of those students who are involved in implementing the survey questions, you know, the best practices training. We're going to have a debrief, etc., and I'm going to participate as well, like in the provision of questions, and I'll probably like answer the survey myself. Is one, local sex workers' experiences of stigma via social exclusion or ostracism and stigma, and then two, local sex workers' experiences of access to healthcare or obstacles in accessing healthcare, and three, local sex workers' experiences of law enforcement. So that it's specifically law enforcement, because that could mean Hamilton Police, that could mean municipal law enforcement, that could mean, so bylaw, that could mean, you know, like border patrol, if we're talking about a migrant sex worker here. And it's relevant because, well, it's relevant all over the world, but it's relevant specifically in Hamilton because Hamilton is considered a sanctuary city, which means that you're not supposed to, if you are involved with the police and you don't have status, you're not supposed to be, they're not supposed to call border patrol, but often that doesn't happen in practice. And it also means as a sanctuary city that you should be able to access city services without showing ID. So we want to protect all people in sex work, and that unfortunately migrants are having a hard time.
Yeah, I hear you with that. I'm also on the board at Swan, Vancouver. So yeah, I'm like, I didn't know that Hamilton was also a sanctuary city.
Hamilton, Vancouver, Toronto.
There we go. Because I know Toronto, but I was like, oh, Hamilton too. Things you learn every single day. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I believe it was like an old framework that they instituted a long time ago, but the people who started it, I think, moved on to other pastures.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, holy crap. This has been like a plethora of information today. My head's going to explode in a good way. But I hope everyone at least has some takeaways too, and we'll be knocking on your door potentially.
Or think of my voice, one of the two.
Well, there are just a few more questions from the audience this time. So not from me, but from the audience. So I guess we'll move over to the Q&A portion of the show here. So this person wrote in, is there any media that you feel represents sex workers accurately and respectfully?
Yeah. So there's like probably, I'll give like my three that I really love. So Working Girls by Lizzie Borden. Wonderful film, very, very matter of fact. I'd say it's the most realistic in terms of matter of factness, and as far as how it's filmed, it's like realism. It's not, there's not any particular, you know, visual or graphic effects that are implemented in the film. It's just matter of fact. It's beautiful. However, it's beautiful. It's accurate. The most recent Criterion collection remaster, 4K remaster. I own it, and it's in the collection. It's beautiful. Yeah, I really love, honestly, who's the film by, I can't remember the director's name. I have it in front of me. Give me 2 seconds. The film is called Whore, but it is by Ken Russell.
There we go.
Ken Russell. Yeah, it's by Ken Russell. There was also a recent remaster on Blu-ray of it. It's also in the archive. I quite like it. It's a little bit more campy. It's more like shock factor, but also correct, I'd say. A little bit more sensational. I really, really enjoy Harlots. Harlots is a depiction of Edwardian or Victorian, rather, sorry, sex workers in the 1800s, when, you know, a third of women sold sex, a third of the female population sold sex, and to subsist. And so, very interesting historical depiction. I think that it is probably one of my most entertaining ones. Veneno by HBO, which is on HBO Max, also available on Crave. It's about Cristina Ortiz Rodriguez, who is known as La Veneno, which means poison in Spanish. She was famous in Madrid, Spain, in the 90s for being on like a talk show, being one of their hired hosts until they shut down. And then also she protected her trans sex working stroll from like literal fascist Nazis with the sickle that she used to use while working on a farm as a youth.
Wow.
Showgirls is really good. I like this particular remaster that I just bought recently. And I'm trying to think, what was the other one that I wanted to say? Oh, I just saw Poor Things in by Yo. Oh, he has I don't know how to say his name, but I feel like disrespectful, so I should look it up. It's like Yo Thank Rose. Anyways, it's Poor Things. It's in theaters right now. It has Emma Stone. It's very well done. I didn't have any inkling going into the theater. And I watched it twice in theater because it was that good. And I'm just like so blown away.
Excited. I need to add this to my list for things to do this weekend. So,
oh, watch it. Oh my gosh. I recommend it. And it's so good. It's like very, it's not all about sex work actually, but it does actually very much do us justice. And I think that it depicts visually the actual act of sex work very matter-of-factly, just like working girls, but a little bit more with fantasy sort of Alice in Wonderland style, like fantastical, like visuals and stuff like this, like more graphic appeal.
I know a lot of people are always like looking for like, okay, what are actually some good films and you know that actually are like accurately portray us. So I think this is going to be so helpful for so many of us because a lot of us are curious and have been disappointed in the past. So
Veneno is my personal favorite, I would say. Gotcha. Best thing I've seen on trans women and sex workers ever.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, add it to the list. Maybe if I have time, I will extract that and put them in the show notes as well. So it's easier for people to get. The last question here is kind of like a two-parter question here. How does one get back into sex work after a long break? This person writes in parentheses, because life got in the way for a couple months, especially camming and video making. Like, how do I get my groove back?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we need to just realize that, like, your sexuality is a renewable resource. Okay, so you're never going to lose it necessarily. And I mean, unless you're ace and that's, you know, its own thing that, you know, you navigate. I think that, first of all, other than the, you know, the deathly overarching specter of rent and needing to pay bills and all of that stuff and needing income, try to just sit with yourself and be comfortable before you actually do any kind of work, because I think it's really important to like, to set an intention when you do that kind of stuff, even if it's like, I hate this guy, I need this however many dollars to do this. Like, even if that's the intention, that's fine. Just like, don't do it mindlessly. I think that that's a large part of the thing, is that sometimes we get into rituals that become mindless, and then therefore the actual like ceremonial aspect of participating in a sex work session with a client or creating a video custom or whatever it might be, right? Like stripping on stage. I think that it becomes a bit contrived when we're like, when we get burned out, obviously. Yeah. And I think that we want to avoid that. How are we going to do that? Well, I don't want to be the one to be like, self-care. I mean, that's important, but I think that what we often lack is community care. So, and not all of us have that, right? Especially as sex workers. So I think that, yes, we do need to love ourselves. We do need to focus on self-care where we can, but I also think we need to rest. I think resting is actually the more important advice I could give, because even the heart rests between each beat, and, you know, we can't be a constant production model. Even though we are the means of our own production, we can't, you know, constantly produce. Resting is productive as well. Resting is needed just as much as production. And I think that to get back into the groove, it's really important to let it flow, ebb and flow. So maybe it's too vague of an answer, but honestly, you need to rest longer. I think that that's what your body is telling you. And for camming, maybe I could suggest changing it up a little, maybe get a green screen if that's too much of a difficult thing or too inaccessible. You could just try like using different colored sheets or something in your background, different textures, different lighting colors, different fixtures, just like, you know, different stuffed animals. I don't know, depending on the aesthetic of your videos, just like mix it up. Also, walk outside, go for a walk,
touch some grass, your body.
Jump up and down in your apartment just for a bit to get your interstitial fluid moving. Like, just move your body a little bit. You'll probably feel a bit better. You know, don't judge yourself because you aren't doing this within a schedule that you expect of yourself, or whatever, you know, the exact context might be, you need to live. You're an animal. We're animals.
Yeah.
You need to live your life more than you need just to produce. And when you can give yourself that moment to breathe and that like proper flow of rest, then, you know, your creativity comes back. And
yeah, agreed.
Yeah, when you feed yourself, you have enough energy, right? So the same goes for your creative self.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. If I can add a couple things to what Yelena said, I mean, like, if I can be truthful, this is the third time Yelena and I have tried to record this episode. We had technical issues on the first try. I actually had to pull out and rest on the second time because I just I couldn't power through. And I'm like, I recognize that I'm really sick right now and I have a huge headache and I need to lie the fuck down. So that's what I did. And like, we will come back. And honestly, we're both like, well, maybe I'll speak for myself, but we're both in good places now to record this episode. So sometimes you just need to take that break and then come back when it gives you joy again. And when I say that, like, as a person that's run her own business for in many different capacities, not just in sex work, but like when something becomes like work to me, or it feels like work and I don't have any like joy or passionate in anymore, then that's a sign for me to take a break or call it quits. So I hope that you can also decipher and delineate between those lines about like, is this something I want to do for the long run, or is this something I want to get back into, and maybe like make goals for yourself along the way and be kinder to yourself as well. So.
And smart goals, goals. So like, they don't need to be huge. As I said, like changing colors, whatever, but SMART goals is an acronym referring to like, specific goals, measurable goals, attainable goals, realistic goals, and then the T is time based. So like, you know, I'll make a video within the next month, and I will have it edited within the next 2 weeks. Like that's a time based, you know, specific, all of those things. Yeah. Exactly. So there you go. It's a framework to help you sort of like take the baby steps towards getting, you know, getting more success, getting the goal achieved, getting more cam clips created, whatever you really want to do.
Totally. Yeah. So best of luck to you. But Yelena, back to you and I, before I let you go, where can we all find you?
All right. Yeah. So I'm all over the internet. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, my website, but I have like one thing that like has all of them together. It's called tappy.tech/Yelena. I think it's TS Yelena Vermillion. I should know that off by heart. Just 1 second. It is, it's Tappy, TAPPY dot tech, TECH /Yelena Vermillion. There's no TS. I also, my Instagram is Isis_intrepid. ISISINTREPID. And my Twitter is Isis Intrepid without an underscore. So just ISISINTREPID. And Facebook page is TS Yelena Vermillion. My website is www.isis-intrepid.com. I'm pretty friendly. So, you know, if you DM me on Twitter, if you DM me on Instagram, that's usually an easy way to ask me about the archive. I also have email, yelena@isis-intrepid.com. And that's all of them.
All the things, all the links, and they're all going to be available in the show notes. And yes, feel free to reach out to Yelena. She is amazing and most likely will answer you and is very responsive. So please reach out, go give her a follow, bug her about the archive if you're interested, hopefully with good intentions. And for everyone else listening at home, it is Stripped by Sia on all major podcast platforms. If you do happen to listen on Spotify or Apple, I would love to ask you for a 5-star review if you haven't already, and maybe a written review too, because I read them all, and maybe it'll be posted somewhere on social media at some point as well. But yeah, other than that, it's new episodes dropping every single Sunday at midnight. It's going to be every week again. Now that this episode is out, obviously not at the time of recording. We're recording before New Year's. So this episode should be out, I think, second week. I'm going to edit this part out. But with that being said, if you want to get in touch with me, it's Stripped by Sia on Instagram. No, I lied. Stripped by Sia podcast on Instagram, because my original one was suspended and taken down, which sucks. I know. It makes me mad. And everyone's like, let me help you get it back. I'm like, it's not coming back.
Have you tried it more than once?
It just got suspended and deleted, like, the one time, and I did nothing. I wasn't posting anything. My feed was just stories.
You should be able to click a link to be able to ask them to reinstate it.
Yeah, I did try to do that. Nothing happened. And I couldn't try more than once. I did try more than once, and then I had like 3 days to do the thing, and yeah. So now I'm just like embarking on a new journey. Stripped by Sia podcast on Instagram.
I'm so sorry. That's annoying.
It's so shitty, but like, I was getting married at the time, so I was like, it's fine. It's fine. I have other things in my mind right now.
Yeah, but it's like, fuck, that's my life. Hello.
I'm like looking at a giant bug on my window. Edit this part out. Other than that, it's...
You were freaked out.
I'm scared. I'm like, holy shit, I thought I killed that guy. Stripped by Sia on Twitter or X.com. Strippedbysia.com if you want to go ahead and pitch yourself to be on the show. I'd love to hear your ideas, whatever episode topics you have. And Patreon.com/strippedbysia. And that is everywhere you can find me. And we'll catch you all for another episode next Sunday. Thank you so much for joining us, Yelena. It was great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Such a pleasure.
Thank you. You're listening to Stripped by Sia, hosted, produced, and edited by Steph Sia. Music by Ted D. Graphic design by Maria Bellandarama, and photography by Ian Dabrin. Are you going to be at X3 or XBiz LA this year? It is award season, so you know what, everyone who is somebody and who wants to be is going to be in town in Los Angeles collaborating. And of course, you want to ensure that you're doing this safely. So courtesy of Sage Health, located in Van Nuys, California, we are offering $15 off your test this winter. Use code STRIPPEDBYSIA to get $15 off. We'll see you in person, and happy testing.